Hi, this is Chris Bricker, and you're listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, Washington. Well, we're introducing a new show, spinning off from the Jefferson Community Foundation's update feature on Tuesday morning on the Salish. Now, it's on alternate Fridays at 12:10 p.m., and yours truly, Chris Bricker, and co-host Siobhan Canty, President and CEO of Jefferson Community Foundation, talk about new developments, new paradigms, and the new normal facing Jefferson County as we roll through the last half of 2020 and into 2021. The name of the show now is Community Tides, and Siobhan Canty should be on the line. Are you there, Siobhan?
I am indeed, Chris. Good morning.
Good morning, and or good afternoon, as the case may be. We want to thank you for joining us, and we're really glad to have settled on a name, Community Tides, and we're going to make sure that we get a summary out there on our website every week so that people can tune in if they happen to miss the broadcast and can tune in and hear a rebroadcast at any particular time in our podcast archives. Well, Siobhan, welcome. And I think before we start, we should probably give a shout out to the folks that organized the reckoning a conversation between the BIPOC and law enforcement in Jefferson County, and that happened last night between 7 and 9, and that is going to be rebroadcast and should be on the website, so we should be looking for that. But any comments, Siobhan, about that whole thing happening?
Yeah, Chris, thank you for bringing that up. I think that everyone that participated in that conversation last night deserves our community's gratitude and just a deep amount of respect for their willingness to be public with their varied perspectives and to come on and have that dialogue publicly as we all come together to try to figure out how each of us individually and where we sit in institutions in this community figure out and reckon with our racist histories and reckon with new ways of thinking about systemic racism and systems themselves. And I just thought that the range of perspectives that was shared was incredible. There were obviously some difficult parts of the conversation. You could hear people's voices shaking at certain points, either with vulnerability or with anger. And it was just such an important and meaningful conversation. I'm very grateful to KPTZ for hosting it, to Kate Dean, and again to the sheriff, to Cameron, to Sabrina, Daryl, all the folks who participated did an incredible job. And I hope it's just the first in many steps that we'll start to take together to be more transparent and open with each other. These are not easy conversations to have. And they are certainly necessary. So I think it was a great next step.
I agree. I think it was a vulnerable and not risky, but a vulnerable first step, especially with what we grapple with here in Port Townsend as a somewhat sheltered community, but not really, because there's just a lot going on underneath. And it's really important for us to sort of uncover that and peel back the layers and talk about ourselves and talk about where we're going.
I want to lift up, too, one of the really important things that happened there is I think there's this real desire when we're faced with issues of democracy or community that make us uncomfortable to try to jump to solutions. And it's so important that we don't do that without deeply, deeply understanding the truth of our racist history and the impact that that has had on people of color and indigenous peoples. And so when we look, for example, at the post-apartheid work of truth and reconciliation committees in South Africa and what the important role that the truth part of that played, where we have public forums where the truth was told of the harm that had been done, not just situationally, although that was part of it, but what that added up to in terms of real systems and real oppression, I think that the conversation last night was a glimpse into what could be possible through community forums for us as we all start to better understand the truth.
That's for sure. And I think that for us to understand the present day, it's really important for us to understand the past and to understand the whole systemic development of on many levels that have happened in our nation's history. Our nation was built on a complex combination of ideals and nastiness. And I think that it's important for us to understand systemically where we're at right now and what we need to do. Once we start to develop that understanding, what we need to do in order to make things better.
And I think that is the part that we can commit to, each one of us, you and I, each of our institutions can commit to keeping present in everything we do moving forward.
That's right. And speaking of moving forward, I know that, as usual, there's a lot going on with the community foundation here in the county, and maybe you could give us a little bit of a summary.
Absolutely. It's such a strange time, isn't it? Wondering if we're moving forward or backwards or which way. And
it
in
is.
The meantime, our county is doing a great job at keeping the number of cases down. So I just want to thank everyone for being safe. And especially when we are surrounded by counties whose numbers are rising, everyone's doing a great job. So thank you. In terms of our community need, we're seeing people continue to generally be protected by the services they're providing. They're being provided through unemployment, through the eviction moratorium, through the services of organizations like St. Vincent de Paul and OLECAP. And so we're moving from an urgent, fast-changing landscape, which happened March, April, May, and into a more chronic state of being with this pandemic. And I think people are starting to wake up to this fact that this is not something that is going to be solved quickly, and we truly are in a new mode of operating. And it is so important for us to continue to support those organizations. So the COVID fund itself, in terms of being an emergency response and recovery fund, has paused operations for right now. We made that decision in partnership with all of the nonprofits. They feel like they're in good stead for the moment. However, we have been speaking with and about United Good Neighbors and that annual campaign, which comes up every fall. And there will be a focus on the COVID basic human needs organizations that are providing the services for people who continue to suffer from the impacts of the COVID pandemic in a more chronic way. So in the upcoming weeks, folks will hear more about United Good Neighbors. And in the meantime, we will be keeping an eye on, if we do start moving backwards, either economically or health-wise, the possibility of reopening the COVID fund. And in the midst of all of that, you know, our families are home, working from home, and that's just getting, I think, more and more difficult.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of pandemic fatigue that's setting in. You know, when we're looking down the line and realizing there's going to be more of the same, then the adaptation part of it is something that is very challenging. And I know working from home is one of those things. It's a cultural change of sorts. Although our disabled community has been championing the whole idea of working from home for quite some time, but we're facing all kinds of things. We're facing detachment from a company culture, not being able to go in and mix physically with the company, or the outsourcing part of it, the working more hours, the tendency to work more hours per day, the quality of life benefits, the isolation, the burnout, even workers' compensation, and the whole idea of collaboration and the whole paradigm is changing. You know, what does it mean to bond in a virtual setting as opposed to an interpersonal setting? So there's lots of things that are happening that way, and And then just the whole idea that the tech part of it has been rapidly catching up with the reality of what's going on. And so much has happened in a short amount of time. And I think there was an equivalency thing that went out just by means of comparison. And that rapid development in bandwidth and the whole idea of being able to provide bandwidth and the rest of that, 10 years of development has been sort of distilled into 2 weeks of equivalent time. That's how rapidly things are changing and how rapidly things are happening.
And just emotionally, intellectually, it's so hard to keep up with the changes we all need to make to accommodate these things. Not to mention our eyeballs are all about to fall out from being on Zoom for hours at a time.
That's for
so,
sure.
So, yeah, I think we can't, you know, it's important for us to keep acknowledging the challenges of this, these kind of vast array of changes happening so quickly. I actually saw some folks in my network who I was concerned about. They weren't voicing their own mental health challenges, but I could see that there was depression setting in, and I sent out a little note on my Facebook page saying, you know, here are some resources, here are some things to think about. And I got a wave of unexpected response from people saying, did you put that out there for me? So I think it's important. I had no idea the number of people in my community that were really facing the challenges of all the changes of which you spoke, and of, you know, on the other side of it, spending so much time with their families or, you know, inside alone. And I think it's very important that we continue to keep this on the forefront, and that those of us who have the capacity and the understanding and to reach out to others, keep doing that. I just want to mention the NAMI, National Alliance on Mental Illness, their hotline number, so that folks can have it just in case anyone needs it. Their hotline number is 800-950-6264. We are all in a new day. Everyone can use support. Don't hesitate to use that if reaching out to the folks closest to you feels uncomfortable. As Chris put it so well, we are facing just a vast amount of change, and we're all coming up with the tools technologically and emotionally and in so many ways to navigate. So, I just commend you for keeping that at the forefront.
Yeah, navigating is really important, and towards the end, we'll give out the NAMI hotline number, I think. Or we could do that right now, I think. Let me get it out.
So I have it right here, Chris. I can repeat it if you like.
It's 800-950-6264. That's 800-950-6264. And there's always somebody on the other end to talk about situations. And when you said that you sent this thank you out, and thank you for this, for coping with this and all the rest of that, and you had such a universal response of people thinking that they were being spoken with individually.
And yes,
that really struck me, you know.
It struck me too. I had no idea, you know. I just sent out an invitation to what I thought was, you know, a couple people I thought needed to hear the words, and, you know, I got at least 10 folks responding to it. So I think all of us probably have more people around us who need a little bit more love and support maybe than they're asking for. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, and I think also we're dealing with a reality, not a stigma. Even if there's there was a Kaiser Family Foundation poll that was done actually last April, or it was centered around last April. So we have a few months that have gone by since then. The emergency hotline for people in emotional distress registered a more than 1,000% increase in April compared to the same time the previous year. And roughly 20,000 people texted that hotline which was run by the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration in April and May. And so there's the whole concept of online therapy, and Talkspace reported a 65% jump in clients since mid-February. So these entities are out there to help, and the statistics are a reality that we have to sort of confront ourselves with. But funding is really important. Funding is really important for mental health, and I'd like you to speak to that a little bit, because based on data collected after natural disasters and terrorist attacks and economic downturns that show a likely increase in suicides or overdoses or substance abuse, we need to really increase the whole idea of the availability of what do they call it? Telemedicine. You know, telemedicine is going to be a way of life as we go into the future, and I think that mental health counseling is going to be part and parcel of that.
Well, we have some exciting developments, actually, in that regard, because it is important that folks have places to go, and it's equally important that the organizations in our community that work on mental health, supporting folks with mental health, places like NAMI, Jumping Mouse, that we all make sure that those services are present in our schools and at home for families, and because it is hard to step up sometimes into that space for the first time. And so to meet families where they are, we have some good news about that. There's a new position being developed by a collaborative group that includes those organizations, Jumping Mouse, National Alliance on Mental Illness, the YMCA, and they've been speaking with the schools, too, I know, and they're developing a position called the Family Resources Navigator, and they're going to develop a website that lists all of the resources available to families as they navigate these new times, and they're going to hire a part-time position to work. I think it's going to be housed at the YMCA, although that has not been finalized, and they are going to have a person on hand who can help families navigate resources, not only mental health resources, but educational resources as we move to more online learning, family conflict issues. As we've mentioned before, domestic violence has gone up and since the beginning of the pandemic, and that's largely inter-family conflict. So all kinds of services hopefully will be made more easily available to families as they navigate all of these new realities. And I think for more information, folks can contact the Community Foundation or Jumping Mouse. They have not launched this position yet. They're seeking funding now to do so, and we fully support that effort and see it as a critical need to moving forward. I also think that broadband in this context, it seems like a jump to go from mental health to broadband, but so much of the work that we have to do to not only access mental health support, but also just our lives at this point, as you said so well a few minutes ago, you know, the ways we work, the ways our students are educated, you know, it's not just about access, it's a whole culture of how we foster connection, but certainly at the center of that would be adequate broadband for our community, and that's really coming forward as resiliency and recovery conversations continue in the various sectors. Almost universally, they're putting forward broadband as a need for investment in our community. So everything from individual action to systemic change is needed to accommodate these kinds of new realities going forward.
I would also venture to say that it's really important to keep pressure on our legislators, because we hear a lot about funding COVID research, but we hear little about funding mental health. And so I think it's really, really important for us to make sure that those things go hand in hand. And we should be thankful for the efforts that the Community Foundation is doing, and NAMI, and all of the related entities, Jefferson Healthcare, all of the folks, and our police department navigator, all of these folks that are actually helping us to face a whole set of new paradigms and ways of being, at least for the next year or so.
And in closing, Chris, you said it so well. I think we have to think in terms of systems, but act in terms of individual relationships. And just reminding folks, yes, to go and be in touch with your representatives and be in touch with your family and friends.
Well, Siobhan, thank you so much for joining me. And we'll be back in touch with one another before we know it, a week after next.
Thanks, Chris, and thanks to KPTZ for being a great community partner.
All right. And you've been listening to Community Tides with Chris Bricker and Siobhan Canty.